homage to all Buddhas and Bodhisattvas. Call forth as much as you can of love, of respect and of faith. Remove the obstructing defilements and clear away all your taints. Listen to the perfect wisdom of the gentle Buddhas, taught for the weal of the world, for heroic spirits intended. This life is so precious. There's no guarantee of even another moment. Life is fleeting, swiftly passing, vanished in an instant, gone in a flash. Please, honored followers of Zen, do not pass your days and nights in vain. This weekend is rather a special weekend. Yesterday was someone's birthday. Who knows whose birthday it was yesterday?
Isan Dorsey.
If you don't know who Isan Dorsey is, you could read this book. And there's wonderful, wonderful photographs. Street Zen. And without Isan Dorsey, I would not be sitting here. And without Isan Dorsey, we would not have Maitri Hospice, which is what he founded, just by taking some guys in and looking after them. He was born in 1933. And he died the year after I got to America, so I didn't actually ever get to meet him. But when I read this book and met some of the people who knew him, I realized that perhaps I could actually practice Zen meditation, and perhaps I could keep going and try to find some kind of peace in this troubled world. I didn't think that someone like me would ever be acceptable in a Zen temple until I read about Isan Dorsey. The last job I had before I came into Zen practice was as stage manager of a female impersonator show. And Isan Dorsey was a well-known female impersonator and had a very, very wild life, drank a lot, a lot of drugs, lots of fighting. And yet if he had been stuck with that perception of himself, if he had felt that he was this wrong person, this person who wasn't heterosexual, this person who didn't particularly look like the people around him at the Zen Center. But he stepped out and stepped forward. And I think that's one of the worst things that keeps us separate is the way that we perceive each other. People looked at this person and often couldn't tell was that a man or a woman till he had his best dress on. He was a more beautiful woman than I could ever be. I highly recommend reading this book. There's some lovely photographs of him in his female side. So I just had to mention him today because, as I say, without him I wouldn't be sitting here. And Isan opened the door for a lot of people who did not think that they would ever fit into the Zen mold, the perceived Zen mold. So I just want to pay tribute to him and recommend everyone, if you haven't read the book, please read it. And he came, like most of us, into Zen practice through great suffering. My teacher, Zenke Blanche Hartmann, often says, no one comes to Zen practice because they're wildly happy. And I think a lot of us, I certainly came to Zen practice from being homeless. And I was the opposite of wildly happy. And it seemed there might be some kind of life that might be different. Something that could lead me into something more fruitful than what I was already involved in. Another special tribute today. Who knows what day this is?
International Women's Day.
Thank you. International Women's Day. International Women's Day. Now, there's another group that had trouble entering into Zen practice. It's said that when Maha Prajapati, who was Buddha's auntie, who raised him, when she decided she'd like to join in, and the women in that region of India wanted to join in and become part of the monastic practice, it's said that actually the Buddha refused. Women at that time were not perceived as equal to men. And were still not perceived as equal to men either. But if you don't know any of the stories of the women, this book is one that I recommend, The First Buddhist Women. And it's said that Ananda, Buddha's disciple, eventually persuaded the Buddha to let women come and be part of the movement. I'd like to read Maha Prajapati's poem. These are all the songs of enlightenment of the women. And when I was at Tassajara Monastery, I read some of these one evening to the assembly. And people started laughing. I was mentioning this to Mike the other day, because every story is so tragic. And the cumulative effect of hearing all that tragedy was that actually people started to laugh. But Maha Prajapati, Maha means great, and Prajapati is leader, a leader of people, a leader of an assembly. So her story is the first one in this book. And I can find it again. Here we are. So she's known as the founding mother of Buddhism. And she was the first female Buddhist teacher. So they say that she's recognized as the founding mother of Buddhism. So here's her song of enlightenment, her poem of enlightenment. Homage to you, Buddha, best of all creatures, who set me and many others free from pain. All pain is understood, the cause, the craving is dried up. The Noble Eightfold Way unfolds. I have reached the state where everything stops. I have been mother, son, father, brother, grandmother. Knowing nothing of the truth, I journeyed on. But I have seen the Blessed One. This is my last body, and I will not go from birth to birth again. Look at the disciples all together, their energy, their sincere effort. This is homage to the Buddhas. Maya gave birth to Gautama for the sake of us all. She has driven back the pain of the sick and the dying. Every moment precious. What was it that these folks who came to our practice through such struggles, what was it that they came to find? It's probably much the same as what everyone sitting here came to find. A bit of relief from suffering, a bit of relief from life's pains. The Buddha said, where there is perception, there is deception. As I said earlier, one of the greatest deceptive perceptions is of each other. I bet if you look around, you'll find yourself thinking you know people. We used to, in San Francisco, talk about munibus meditation, where you get on the munibus and check it out, look around, and you think, oh, I know what that person's like. I know what that person's like. And we tend to get fixed in our perceptions of each other. You can see it in a sangha, for example. We all tend to fall into these roles. Oh, that person's like that. That person makes jokes. That person's always slow. That person... And so our perceptions become fixed. And our perceptions of ourselves become fixed, which leads to our perceptions of the whole world surrounding us becoming fixed. So what can we do about that? Well, Joe here is Shuso, head monk or head student for this practice period. And he's been leading us in wonderful discussions of the precepts. And the precepts are guidelines that arose when the monks lived together to help them to get along with each other and to help them to find the truth of the Buddha way. So we've been looking at these, and in fact this afternoon from 2 till 4, everyone is invited to come and take a look at the precepts. I believe today we're on sexuality? Yeah, okay. Sexuality, 2 to 4. How do we not misuse it? So the precepts are things like I vow not to kill, I vow not to steal, I vow not to drink the wine of delusion, things like that. And I think there's a key in there for us to actually begin to unlock, to begin to get away from our fixed perceptions. For example, the first one, I vow not to kill. Well, my teacher, Zenkei Lunch Hartman, her husband, Lou, was my honorary father. He sat in my family seat for all of my ordinations. And Lou had a really good take on the precepts. When you listen to us chanting them, we go, I vow not to kill. And Lou always chanted it, I vow not to kill. Getting rid of that I, making that I so much less. Because as you probably know in our Zen Buddhism, we say there is no fixed self. So who is this I that's vowing not to kill, vowing not to steal, etc., etc.? Is there a fixed I there? Would someone like to point to themselves? Let's see if we can... Just show me yourself, someone. Show me yourself. The self that we're always talking about, the self that causes such problems. That was an I don't know shrug from Misa. Anyone want to... Ah, so yourself is your foot. Is that right?
Yes.
Yourself is your foot. What about the rest of you? Is that not yourself?
Well, now that you mention that, I guess. Maybe my hand.
So you are composed of a hand and a foot. Anybody else want to have a shot? Yeah? You're composed of a waving hand.
I meant everyone here.
Everyone here. Well, you might as well sit here and give the talk, because that's what I was going to say. The trouble is this individual self that feels so separate from everything else. And that's where the suffering comes in. You know, the Four Noble Truths. The first one, there is suffering. or the Scottish version. It's always something. And then the second one, what's the cause of the suffering?
Dukkha.
Dukkha. Sounds like something you step in. You could come to all my talks. Dukkha is the word for suffering, meaning kind of a feeling of dissatisfaction, a feeling of things are not quite right. But what's the cause of that feeling?
Tanha, selfish desire, I
guess. Self. You're stuck on the self, and what the self has to have to make it happy, and what the self has to have to feel good. Like, I don't want that noise. That doesn't make me happy. I don't like sitting here, the sunshine's too bright in my eyes. Attachment to the self. Now, I'm not saying that there is no self at all. I mean, there's something sitting here. But it's not a fixed entity. And what you said when you indicated that self was everything is rather closer to the mark. The chant we just did actually talks about that. Self can't find glasses. Huh? Which one was it again?
14.
Thank you. See, you don't need to know everything. You can just ask it. Oh, here we go. Chikudo Daisen no Shinto Zai Mitsuai Futsu Ninkon Niridon Ari. Beg your pardon, we have different page numbers. This is one from Zen Center. Song of the Jomon? No, it was Harmony of Difference. Harmony of Difference and Equality. And we just chanted that one, and it says, all the objects of the senses interact and yet do not. Interacting brings involvement, otherwise each keeps its place. Interacting. Interacting brings involvement. Sometimes this practice is misnamed as codependent arising, but it's not actually codependent arising, it's dependent origination. In other words, being part of everything. As you saw, we can't actually even indicate a separate self. How do we know that we are part of everything? How did you know that you were part of everything? What practice did you do that brought you to that conclusion, that you weren't separate?
I guess just sitting.
You really should be sitting. So Zazen, of course, is the way to practice. To practice with this perception of interconnection rather than a perception of a separate self. If we don't go into forms, feelings, perceptions, formations, consciousness, in other words, if we can just stay right here, every thought we have takes us away from that perception that there's no difference between Paul and I. We are completely and utterly interconnected. None of us would be sitting here without all the thousands and millions of people that went before us to bring us here. None of us would be sitting here without the air we breathe. So it's very actually simple to see that none of us can be here alone with this. And that dreadful feeling of aloneness, of separation, is one of our biggest sufferings. Without that intruding upon the way we connect to other people, we can remember that we are completely connected. We can have unconditional love. I've said many a time, I love everyone who's sitting here. I couldn't do that if I allowed judgment to come in the way. if I allowed my perception, oh well, I love everybody except this person right here, oh sorry dear, because they don't quite suit me, you know, they don't quite, you know, well maybe that person over there, they're not dressed very well, well maybe that, but knowing if we just stay with our Zazen practice, we can begin to understand, we can begin to see those connections to the smallest of objects and the largest of objects. Alan Watts, I think it was, talks about this as waves in the ocean. I think Suzuki Roshi talked about it too, but I'm not sure. Waves in the ocean. The ocean is our life. Individual waves seem to arise and go along and then they go down again. Nothing is added to the ocean to make those waves. Nothing's taken away. We simply arise as part of the ocean and go back into the ocean again. It's not like taking a brick out of a wall and now the wall's broken. Life is the ocean that we arise from on this wave and sink back into. Suzuki Roshi wrote about it beautifully in Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind, or spoke of it beautifully in the chapter Nirvana, the Waterfall, when he talks about life as a river coming along and then suddenly goes over the edge and these individual droplets come out as the waterfall falls down. And that's the suffering. Oh my goodness, I'm an individual droplet. I'm not really connected to anything else. I have to fight and conquer and do these things to ensure my place, and then, whoop, you're back in the water again. So this life is incredibly, incredibly precious. We lost a couple of people at Maitri Hospice in the last few weeks. On the Han, it says, life is swiftly passing. Do not pass your days and nights in vain. Don't wait. Someone said to me, Misa said to me the other week, what are you waiting for? Don't wait to realize this interconnectedness. This really is a great relief of suffering, or a relief from suffering, the interconnectedness. Mary Oliver. Who made the world? Who made the swan and the black bear? Who made the grasshopper? This grasshopper, I mean, the one who has flung herself out of the grass, the one who is eating sugar out of my hand, who's moving her jaws back and forth instead of up and down, who's gazing around with her enormous and complicated eyes. Now she lifts her pale forearms and thoroughly washes her face. Now she snaps her wings open and floats away. I don't know exactly what a prayer is. I do know how to pay attention, how to fall down into the grass, how to kneel down in the grass, how to be idle and blessed, how to stroll through the fields, which is what I've been doing all day. Tell me, what else should I have done? Doesn't everything die at last and too soon? Tell me, what is it you plan to do with your one wild and precious life? What do you plan to do with your one wild and precious life? There may be more, of course, but we're not sure. It's interesting to see what turns up with all the bits and pieces I've been looking at in the last few days. Here's that part I was talking about from Alan Watts, about interconnectedness. It's from the book. We feel and conceive of ourselves as human beings, of being alive, of individual existence and identity. We suffer from a hallucination, from a false and distorted sensation of our own existence as living organisms. Most of us have the sensation that I myself is a separate centre of feeling and action, living inside and bounded by the physical body, a centre which confronts an external world of people and things, making contact through the senses with a universe both alien and strange. If you read Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind, you'll notice that Suzuki Roshi says the same thing, that we think we're making contact through the senses with something external, but in actual fact everything is arising in the mind. There is no external thing out here to make contact with. How could there be? We're part of it. Making contact through the senses with a universe both alien and strange. Everyday figures of speech reflect this illusion. I came into this world. You must face reality. This feeling of being lonely and very temporary visitors in the universe is in flat contradiction to everything known about man and all other living organisms. We do not come into this world. We come out of this world. We come out of it as leaves from a tree, as the ocean waves, the universe peoples. The world peoples, that's its action. Every individual is an expression of the whole realm of nature, a unique action of the total universe. This fact is rarely, if ever, experienced. Even those who know it to be true in theory, intellect, continue to be aware of themselves as isolated egos inside bags of skin. So I love that expression, the universe peoples. The world peoples, that's what it does. We didn't do this. The world peopled with us. I have no idea what time it is. And
I think it's 12:30, is that correct?
Yeah. What time
is it? 12:20.
No! No! Well, we can skip lunch. There's so much to say. Well, these talks are always so short. Remember that when you look at another person and you can see your perception of them arise. Because you all sit Zazen, you know you don't have to believe that perception. You can see it, leave it there, and then meet that person fresh. Let yourself be in love with everyone. It's okay. It's okay. It eases the suffering greatly. Joe and I know we're the same person. In actual fact, Joe is actually giving this talk through the art of ventriloquism. He's having a wee bit of trouble with the Scottish accent, but it's not bad. Well, I'd like to leave some time so we can all talk about this, not just this person sitting here. So let me just use another Mary Oliver poem to round up this part. And this one you can see it's got holes in it, and it's got a nice picture with it. And because I don't believe that anyone should be excluded from our practice, and that our practice is best open to absolutely everyone. As some of you know, I have a street ministry. One of the ways the street ministry got started was by doing memorials, because I found out that poor people living in SRO hotels didn't get memorials. Or they occasionally got one, but it was Christian, whether they were Christian or not. So that was the first way that I started going out and meeting people, and then eventually showing them Zazen, which was a lovely thing to share. But of course I didn't call it Zazen, and I didn't dress like this. So this poem was one that I use in every single memorial. And here it is, Wild Geese by Mary Oliver. And the first line, I think, says it all. You do not have to be good. You do not have to be good. You do not have to walk on your knees for 100 miles through the desert repenting. You only have to let the soft animal of your body love what it loves. Tell me about your despair and I'll tell you mine. Meanwhile, the world goes on. Meanwhile, the sun and the clear pebbles of the rain are moving across the landscapes, over the prairies and the deep trees, the mountains and the rivers. Meanwhile, the wild geese, high in the clean blue air, are heading home again. Whoever you are, no matter how lonely, the world offers itself to your imagination, calls to you like the wild geese, harsh and exciting, over and over, announcing your place in the family of things. Your place in the family of things. And because Miso was kind enough to carry this in for me, just very quickly show you the 10 precepts reduced to 2. Rather like George Carlin, if you haven't heard him, the 10 commandments reduced to 1, and then he throws that one away, which I kind of like. So this is all that we need to know. And this is the way for us to experience interconnectedness with each other. It simply says, sometimes I get this wrong, do no evil, do all good. Do no evil, do all good. So it's our simple guideline. We don't have to have a good memory and remember all the precepts and rules. This is by Ikkyu. In calligraphy, you copy the masters to get the mind of the master. So this is Ikkyu, and if you haven't read any Ikkyu, you really should. Ikkyu. He writes a lot about the hypocrisy of monks. It's very good. My favourite poem of his is, even the girls in the brothel are more worthy of that golden robe than you are. Perception. Perception. So this is Ikkyu. Well, these words could go for hours and hours and hours, but I guess people might get hungry. I'd like to throw this open for words of wisdom, questions. Heckling. Wow, it must have been very clear.
I kind of have a question.
Yes.
The EQ scroll.
Yeah. Yeah. Yours for $10.
Well, that wasn't my question.
Yeah.
Is that, is he expressing a variant of your recommendation or advice that we not intellectualize? Is that what it's this dualistic judging mind, is judging one's own behavior or action in the world and thereby kind of separating oneself from the flow of life?
I think you've got it there, Kent. And but of course, this also is dualistic. We've still got evil and good. So my way of reducing this to one is above all, do no harm.
Mm-hmm.
So then we can just hold one precept. Thank you.
So even stating it is too much.
But you have to say something, as a famous person once said. Or they say the only way to really express this is to hold up one finger or draw a circle in the air, because otherwise you might be deceived by my words. But Mike told me one time that if I held my finger up in the air, someone might break it off.
So. Cut it off.
Cut it off.
Judy is one finger teaching. The cut off is the side.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. So don't get attached to the words. Just the feeling. Lisa.
If you are having a hard time finding into connectivity for the day, do you have any tips to start it off? Or, you know, like something to kind of dive into it one more time? It kind of comes and goes.
Well, let's all do it together. Everyone take the right hand and put it on top of the left wrist. And can you feel a pulse? No, your wrist, honey, the other way, there we go. Can you feel a pulse?
Yeah.
Let's just sit with that pulse for a moment. Now, are you making your heart beat?
Yeah. That's cool.
That one always brings me back. We're not in control. We have this great gift. The heart beats, the lungs breathe. We're not in charge of this. That's our interconnectedness.
Thank you.
So let's remember that we're precious to each other. Every moment that we have together is precious. We really do have no idea of how long we have. And that's one of the great things about volunteering at hospice. It's fantastic. And they're looking for volunteers right now. Maitri, M-A-I-T-R-I, Maitri Hospice. Paul already volunteers there. It's wonderful, because when you look, when you realize that you know, of course you're going to die. We often live like we're not going to. But when we realize we've no idea, it could be the next second for all we know, then it's time to really connect. Only connect, connect up. There is no separation. So, practice, practice, practice. Any other questions, statements?